super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake. Mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who gives Freddy Krueger nightmares, 42nd Street Pete.
It's true, probably at this point I do. Hi, I'm back. And that was one hell of a premiere last Saturday, the Under the Scares premiere in Tribeca, New York, hosted by the guys who put it together, Digger Films, Hugo and Steve. Thank you very much for inviting me out and including me in the film. It was a good time. My girls came out. They enjoyed it. Rob from Wild Eye came out. He liked it. Everybody liked it. And, you know, I was sort of like, you know, when we were talking about it, because I was having all these problems and still am. But I just thought, you know, if they thought I was worth showcasing on the big screen in one of their productions, you know, I really felt that I should be there to see how, you know, it came out. And I think anybody who watches this film, it's a learning experience. If you're even thinking of shooting an indie film, whether it be horror or exploitation or anything, it's a true learning experience. You have, you know, quotes and, you know, insight from like Herschel Gordon Lewis, Jimmy O. Oh, God, I'm trying to think. I'm just, you know, tired myself. Tony Timpone, Michael Gingold, Debbie Rochon, Brink Stevens. Just, you know, a whole mixed bag of genre people, each putting in what, you know, what they feel is going on and their, you know, their insight, their personal, you know, experiences in the genre. So, you know, it was really well done and I think very well received. And, you know, I don't know if it's when it's going to be for sale, but, you know, probably keep in touch with Digger Films, diggerfilms.com, The Gravedigger. And a lot of this, you know, stemmed out of something. They were making a Tales from the Crypt type movie called Tales of the Gravedigger. And they were trying to shop it around and we're getting the usual screw job that we all get. And then they decided to do this. And actually, you know, like I said, where I met them was, you know, Amy Lynn Best and Mike Watts, Genghis Khan, a few years ago. And we met there and they, you know, they interviewed me at a Fango show and went on from there. And again, I think they did a really great job with it. I think it was really, you know, good showing. I just wish that a lot of the people that were prominently featured in the film, you know, could have made it out, you know.
Douchebags. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. He said it, I didn't. No, that's the way I feel. You know, it's like some people say, like, you know, the East Coast horror scene and this and the other thing. I really think there is one. It's just, you know, some people just, you know, they, for lack of better words, feel that their shit don't stink. And, you know, God bless them, but I'm not one of them. So I come out, you know, like I said, they were nice enough to include me in the project. And I came out and supported it. And I will continue to support it because I really feel it's a learning experience for a lot of people. A lot of insight, you know, a lot of great stuff. So, Under the Scares from Digger Films. Check it out. Coming somewhere near you or just go to the website. And I'm sure I asked Steve to send it up to Canada Cinema Wasteland and I'm sure he's going to like it. And we'll probably be screening up there as well. So it's all good.
I understand people are busy, but when you're involved in a project like this and it's a real grassroots effort, like you said, you know, you put aside everything that was going on. And let me tell you, you got a lot going on and you put it all aside to go up there and to show respect for these guys for actually getting this thing completed. Because in this day and age, completing a film is a major task. And really, honestly, you know, what would it have hurt to give them an hour of your time? Maybe you couldn't stay the whole night. Just make an appearance, man. It's you guys, the people I'm talking about here, I'm not going to name names. I'm going to be nice, which normally I name them on the Night Watch show. I'm being nice. You guys know what it's like.
You can name them. I was going to name them, but I'm, you know, not that I'm taking the higher road or anything, because I'm getting to the point, you know. So I got snubbed by somebody over here. Like, I'm not even going to mention his name because it ain't worth fucking mentioning. But, you know, a lot of shit's been going on with this whole industry, and the industry as a whole is not in good shape. And people should pull together, they're just not, and it really sucks. And
too much ego, man. There's too much ego developing before talent. And then we got people who are prominent, like you said, and they really need to get up there and do a little more support. And if it would have been, you know, the new Nightmare on Elm Street, oh, they'd have had their butts right there front and center. But because it was some small thing, it doesn't really matter. Well, it does matter. It matters more than sticking your face in front of a camera at the new Nightmare on Elm Street premiere. It matters because we are the ones that are keeping you in business. So how about you try to show a little respect?
Amen. From the Reverend 42P, that's a big amen, as I belch on my steak. I don't know what it is. It's so fucking hot in here, it's ridiculous. That's why I'm like lethargic tonight, because I feel like one of those big fucking lizards that sat on a fucking rock all day.
That's awesome.
I haven't eaten a bunch of bugs yet, but...
If you hear weird noises, I'm opening a copy of Clerks on Blu-ray. I picked up a really cheap copy. They had the Clerks Deluxe Edition on Blu-ray, so I had to grab it for $10.
It's in black and white. What's Blu-ray going to do to it? Come on, be serious.
Yeah, but it's got all the extra stuff I've never seen, you know, all this stuff. Oh. And for $10, it's got like the director's
cut. Yeah, you're right, for $10.
Yeah, man, it's got all that stuff. I dig Kevin Smith. I think he's
great. I love that Zach and Mia do a porno thing. I think that was great.
It's hilarious, wasn't it? Yeah.
But I'm a fan of lowbrow, you know, gutter fucking humor anyway, so it doesn't matter. Oh, and you're alluding to some personal problems I'm having. Well, I'm going to come clean with this shit, and I'm not going to air my dirty laundry in public, but I'm a little bit fucking pissed off at some of this shit that's been going down with me personally, because basically I have to be out of here at the end of the summer. My mother was in the hospital, we had talked about that. Well, things didn't go too well as far as 42P goes, as being, you know, anything. And basically, I was told that I have to be out. And it all boils down to jealousy on the part of certain family members. I don't know why anybody is jealous of me, because I don't make a fucking nickel doing this shit other than a couple residuals for the DVDs. I make my money hustling on eBay and trying to hustle here and there. And it's a hard fucking living. So basically, if somebody offered me a job, I wouldn't even know what to ask for. I don't even know what the fucking going rate for anything is anymore. I don't know what anybody's paying. But be that as it may, I'm going to have to be out probably by the end of the summer. Don't know where I'm going. Got several possibilities. A lot of people have offered me shit, and I really appreciate that. I just got to get in a situation where I'm comfortable. It just comes down to that. I can't deal with straight people anymore. I'm better off, you know, with creative people. But as far as I'm concerned, the whole East Coast is dried up with this shit. I think it's... like Pittsburgh and heading that way, that's where I think, or Ohio or something. Because I don't see anybody around here doing anything really good anymore. I mean, it's just so stale and so cost prohibitive, and very like you were saying, very few people pull together anymore.
Yeah, you know? And you know, you're friends with all the ones that do, and it's a handful of cool people. But the problem is that handful of cool people are getting screwed over by people who really could be helping them out there.
Yeah. So, if any rich women out there want to adopt me, we can talk.
That's awesome.
I got to say something, and this is going back to even with this situation with, I don't want to say too much, because, you know, somebody might hear this, the wrong person might hear it and run back and tattle or something. But anyway, women have to realize that deep down inside, and it's genetic, all men are slobs. And you can't cure that. It's genetic. Realize this. Embrace this fact. This is long suppressed evidence, because people want to just blame the fact that we're douchebags on other things. But the fact that we're slobby douchebags is because it's genetic. And see, I'm not even going to say I'm sloppy. I'm more disorganized. In other words, you're not going to move anything on my desk and find a half-eaten fucking pizza crust on there or something like that. You know?
Yeah, I don't do that. Yeah,
I'm not just like fucking disorganized, all right? But... And, you know, sometimes when I use the facilities, I miss the bowl, because guys do that. I actually wanted to make this thing, you know, available. I wanted to patent this, the P-Funnel 2000, you know. We're basically, this would work. I mean, you know, here's something. Somebody's going to steal the fucking thing, but you know something? I don't have time to sit in a patent office all day. Basically, you go to a dollar store and you get one of those long fucking, you know, transmission fluid funnels and a little thing to hook to the wall next to the commode. So therefore, as drunk as you may be, all you got to do is grab that funnel, stick your dick in it, and piss, and you're not going to mess up anything. And then you just wash it out with a cup of fucking water and hang it back up. How much more simplistic could fucking life become, you know? But, you know, that's the crux of the things. Guys are fucking slobs, and you have to realize that. You know?
True.
Standard rule of thumb. If it itches, we will scratch it, you know? That's what we do.
With me, it's just because I got so much stuff, you know. I'm like a collector of all this weird stuff, and it's just, and I know that's your deal too, and so it's kind of cluttery because I got so much stuff. But it's not like on TV where those people are like pack rats. It's more like wow, man, it's a museum. But it's also, you know, it's kind of, again, it's not dirt. It's just stuff.
Well, I'll give you a verbal visual. On top of my computer tower is one porn DVD called Porn Star Isle, which I'm selling, and three stag films, my business. No, five stag films, my business cards, and a deck of cards. In front of the tower is five more stag films. Next to this is a glass iced tea, an ashtray with a roach in it, wild yam pills, all these fucking weird herbal supplements, box of Claritin, my digital camera. Here's something new, triclosamine, which helps your joints. It actually fucking works. And then all my notes that I haven't even touched for tonight's show. So
I tell you, I'm gonna meet you on that. I'm gonna tell you what's on my computer, and you're gonna laugh. Okay, right to my left is a giant
switchblade. I forgot.
There you go. That's your protection. On my left is a giant Darth Vader bank. Right in front of me is the Bat Phone, the old red light up Bat Phone from the Batman TV series. Next to that is a bunch of Batman action figures stacked up here. My recording studio for band stuff. Two printers, two towers, my soundboard, and then tons and tons of knick-knack stuff like little Lego Batman figures and Justice League guys and a Godzilla monster and a werewolf. So see, I don't have too much depravity, but I got a lot of stuff.
yeah, that's pretty fucking mind-boggling. How do you see any of this shit on your desk? Like, I have this problem.
I was going to say, well, I can see the monitor, I can see the board, and I can see what I'm supposed to be doing here to make sure people can hear you. That's what matters.
Okay, that works.
Forgot my R2-D2 trash can sitting here next to me, too.
I don't have a trash can. I sweep the floor once a week. I'm tidy like that. And you find money, so it works that way.
Well, that's cool.
Also have a dog under the desk that is leaving for some. I don't know if he's leaving or...
See, mine would be so noisy. You've heard my dog. It's like the devil. You can't even do it.
Well, he just was... I don't know. He's depressed for some reason, so he was under the desk. I don't know if he wants to leave or not. No, he's curling up in the corner.
He's like, well, I'm just going to chill.
Hey, you know what it is? Like I said, it's too fucking hot.
Well, if it's that hot, then it could have been something, another thing. If you happen to have partaked in any activity before the show, he might just be real mellow right now.
The dog don't smoke weed, I do.
I know, but it's like a secondhand deal.
I don't buy it. Then again, I can't say I don't buy that because I had firsthand experience on a set of a movie, and I really felt... actually, going to that, we're shooting some Bloodwing shit Sunday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we're shooting one of the pivotal scenes, and my girls are going to be in it. And, hey, you know something? My girls came out, and they enjoyed that whole thing, too, over there. You know, and they're, you know, you got to figure, you know, dad's 50-something, they're in their 20s, and they got it. And then they turned around, and I says, yeah, I don't want to make another fucking movie again, ever. But that's not the case. And actually, let's talk about upcoming fucking projects here. And I sat down with Mike Razzo, and see... I think my girls are hot enough, you know, and I'm talking from a very biased opinion, that they should model. And in order to facilitate this, I'm going to put them on a DVD of something really classy. It's not going to be hardcore. It's not going to be sleazy. I don't know if I told you this. I don't even know if I said this, that I acquired the Joe Bonica library, some of it.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And nobody knows who Joe Bonica is, he was a photographer back in the 50s. Actually, he shot a lot of atomic bomb test footage, too. But before he did that, he had something known as the Film of the Month Club. And basically, this was an underground deal. And for $20, you got a 50-foot reel with a real hot 50s-type chick, all natural, you know, bare-ass naked. Now, bear in mind, this was real hot shit back then. This is like almost... It's almost like a Playboy-esque type thing.
Oh, but, you know, they're like doing things like ironing and crap. It's really weird.
No, not even that. Just posing. Just, you know, really provocative. I mean, I've had some of that stuff, you know, but the chicks are really hot. So I figured, you know, we were talking and, you know, they said they really don't want to get involved in anything that's going to show any hardcore shit because they want people to get the wrong idea, which I can understand, even though, you know, we all know who their mom is. But I have to respect that, and I says, look, we'll do it this way. So I talked to Mike, and you know, we had a meeting, and we got Serena on the phone, and it's going to happen. Cool. And it's going to be a really classy package, and hopefully we're going to try to get it, you know, through the pipeline so we can have it for the Wasteland show.
Oh, hell yeah. We should be
not okay. When you got me sticking you in the ass with a pitchfork. You know? No, I want this, I seriously want it done, and I don't want it done for selfish reasons. I really think, you know, my girl should be showcased, and, you know, hopefully they can, you know, snag a couple gigs through this and nothing sleazy and no fucking underhanded shit, because then you're going to have to deal with me. So, you know, we keep this on the up and up, but I think it'll work. And also, I just got the authored thing back. Now, I don't know whether they're going to want to do this or not. I have a bunch of really professional shot softcore bondage that, it was something I had in my library that I, you know, had put aside and started getting that stinky vinegar fucking smell on it. So, you know what that means. So, time to transfer it, you know, and at least you got it transferred. So,
that's right.
I saw, you know, some of the, you know, the advanced footage on that. And it's really neat stuff. I just don't know as far as whether I can get this into a mainstream store. Or what, rather, can they get it into a mainstream store? I think, to me, this is no more nasty than Hostel. You know, with bull gags. And
it's probably a lot less nasty than Hostel.
Well, yeah, because there's no blood and gore and shit like that. But they're basically, these women are really good actresses, probably seen people, and it's really professionally done. It's none of this backyard shot in somebody's fucking garage crap, although they do have a couple scenarios like that, but you know, it's all well shot. And I forget what we're going to call it. We haven't come up with something yet. I had this really classy title. I think it was going to be Dark Dreams, Dark Desires, and then we really think that, you know, if you put Fuck Me Up on the Ass on the cover, it's going to sell faster, so okay, we'll go with that. That's what the public wants. I mean, just look at the, you know, look what my bestseller was, Extreme Sleaze Showcase.
And Hitler's Harlot.
Yeah. I don't have the numbers on Hitler's Harlot, but I know Extreme Sleaze has been replicated at least. There's been at least four runs of it, four reprints. So.
Well, I know while I was sitting at your table or next to you there, Hitler's Harlot was like, pshum, pshum, pshum. And I was like, I was afraid I wasn't going to get one.
Yeah, well, I didn't bring enough of them either. Last show, I didn't bring enough of them. There's certain shit that I should just, like, you know, buy 20 of them. What the fuck? But, you know, you never know.
True.
But I'm going to have a wonderful selection this time because I did a lot of trading, you know, after the show.
Uh-oh.
And I'm putting these aside because I want to have stuff for $10 that'll knock your socks off, no less, you know, the usual run of, you know, $5 stuff, blowout stuff. But I got some really fucking cool shit that, you know, basically goes for, you know, 20 and 30 bucks. So it's going to be good. So I shouldn't stop. I got to stop the self-promotion up at Wasteland. Everybody knows the fucking table. Everybody knows where I am. You're not going to miss me. So plus, I mean, that's going to be a hot happening corner because if you're there and Marsh is there and Mike Razzle and Carter Stevens are going to be there and the Chainsaw Kiss people are going to be there and probably all of us in the same fucking area.
Hell yes.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a rather interesting fucking weekend, to say the least.
I think so.
Yes, yes, yes. But anyway, I got a lot of stuff back last week. If nobody listened, because it was Memorial Day and you were probably out frolicking in the fucking sun, you know. All my listeners frolic in the sun. Who am I shitting, you know? But no. I did a thing last week on character actors. And mostly I did character actors that had come out of World War II as, you know, a homage because it was Memorial Day and we were, you know, paying our respects to these brave men and women, you know, in the armed forces. But I got a couple emails saying, you know, that was really cool. You know, you got anybody else? Well, hey, all you got to do is ask, you know. So I went digging a little bit. Now, here's a guy who's famous and he wasn't allowed to be famous under his real name. Does the name L.Q. Jones ring a bell?
Of course.
Okay. His real name is Justice McQueen, but he couldn't use that for obvious reasons back then. I've heard on more than one occasion that Steve McQueen was a real dick. I really can't elaborate on that because that's the impression I was getting with a lot of people. But anyway, L.Q. Jones started in Battle Cry, and his name in the movie was L.Q. Jones, so he took that as his stage name. And he did, you know, a lot of these World War II movies back in the 50s, like Naked and the Dead, Young Lions, and Hell is for Heroes. Again, all loaded with great character actors like Aldo Ray and Richard Jekyll, people of, you know, that ilk. So anyway, 1962, he hooked up with Sam Peckinpah for, you know, one of Sam's first movies called Ride the High Country, and he's one of the Hammond brothers cast with Warren Oates, another guy we'll get to. Let me have another drink here. I don't know where anybody else in this country is or who's listening here, but it's fucking hot. So anyway, that sort of hooked him up with, I think, basically, I think five or six Peckinpah films. He was in, when they did Major Dundee, he was one of the Haley brothers, again with Warren Oates. And that was in a crazy production. And that was just loaded with, you know, great guys like R.G. Armstrong and Ben Johnson, John Davis Chandler. Oh, shit. Moses Gunn, I think, was in that.
That's a who's who of character actors.
Oh, yeah, it was great. That's one thing good about Sam. He really loved his character actors, really used them. Then the other thing was he teamed with his real-life friend, Strother Martin, in The Wild Bunch. And I don't know if you paid attention to that whole thing, but I was watching an interview, and do you know those guys played it as gay?
No, I did not.
Yeah. I think it had to be LQ because Strother's gone, unfortunately. They were doing some kind of retrospective, and he says, you know, when we got the thing, me and Strother started batting it around how we should do it, and one of us just come up with, why don't we say we're gay? Because if you look at the whole thing, remember when they were blowing those guys away off the roof and they were arguing over one of the bodies?
Right, right.
And he calls him a black-hearted liar, and he just stops and he goes, you shouldn't call me that. And then it was like a lover's quarrel.
Yeah, yeah.
So now knowing that, and you go back and watch this shit, you're like, holy shit, they did pull this off, and probably nobody even picked up on it.
Well, yeah, because he was all like, he said, I'm really sorry. And then he starts apologizing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, crazy shit. But yeah. And then, you know, they were in, Peckinpah was really down on Strother for some reason. I don't know what the deal was. They said he was unmerciful with Strother.
Weird.
And even LQ used to bail him out and say, look, you better fucking lighten up on this shit. But here's another thing, too. He teamed up. Remember Albie Moore from Green Acres?
Yeah, yeah.
They formed a production company, and they produced, and LQ also directed A Boy and His Dog, The Witchmaker, Devil's Bedroom, and Brotherhood of Satan. And Brotherhood of Satan also, you know, starred Strother Martin. So,
you know what, the Wild Bunch is a great movie, but I tell you, watching it again last week, I got to tell you, I can barely take the opening credits. I got to fast forward because those kids are little bastards, man. Someone needs to set them on fire.
Oh, burn the bugs. Yeah, burn the scorpions.
That's horrible. What the hell? The scorpions are trying to run out of that anthill, and they're putting them back in it with a stick, and they filmed that crap. I'm like, what kind of sadist does that, man? I mean,
whatever. Yeah, well, that's what Sam. Well, the whole thing with Sam, too. Remember the whole thing with, I think it was Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid when he buried the chickens up to their necks and shot their heads off or something?
This dumb bastard, man.
Maybe he influenced Ruggiero Deodato. I don't know,
but that's one of the things. I'm so glad that Sage Stallone, when they put out the Cannibal Ferox, you can watch it without the animal mutilation. Yeah.
Well, that's that. But anyway, I'm going back to the whole fucking thing anyway. But, you know, there was something, I read an interview about LQ, and it was something about there was some kind of toxic leak under his house, and he was sick for quite a few years.
Wow.
Because he hadn't done a lot, that all of a sudden he resurfaced in Casino. Remember the good old boy who had a power broker behind the scenes?
Yeah.
But, you know, he had a lot of roots, you know, all the Western stuff he did, you know, because you watch some of the stuff that they run on the Western channel, and they're like, you know, the Gunsmokes and the Wyatt Earps and Cheyennes and stuff. And he always pops up in them. So he was always working. And, you know, for us genre fans, he was a sheriff with The Beast Within. He was a Time Rider. And more recently, Route 666.
Great movie. So underrated.
Yeah. So, yeah. So he's, you know, he's still going on. Unfortunately, this next guy, Warren Oates, passed away of a massive heart attack at 53. And he was one of those guys. Peckinpah found him and basically, you know, made him a collaborator. He was also an ex-Marine, too. And, you know, Peckinpah really thought highly of me, casting, you know, to ride the high country. And then, you know, him and Ben Johnson, his brothers in The Wild Bunch. And then the Bring Me the Head of Alfredo Garcia, which was panned, you know, horribly when it came out. I mean, there's one where basically, according to a lot of the biographers of Peckinpah and Oates, that Oates was basically playing Peckinpah as Peckinpah envisioned himself in that movie.
Weird.
He's a complete badass. But, you know, he was in some great stuff. I mean, Tulane Blacktop with Monty Hellman. I mean, when he was in Dillinger, he actually looked like the real John Dillinger.
Wow.
But hardly any makeup, just the way he you know, combed his hair and shit and grew the mustache. He actually looked like, you know, the original John Dillinger.
That's cool.
Yeah, and You know, he was also, you know, doing some comedy shit, 1941 and Stripes. And I think he, you know, he died when he was doing both Blue Thunder and Tough Enough, because they were both, you know, dedicated in memory to him. So he did a lot of shit. It was there was some story floating around. You know, I read a lot, so I can't even pull my source up. So, but I'm going to say it anyway. Fuck it. Did something about when Sam was doing a lot of cocaine, he was involved, you know, with some of that. And there was something about that. Him, Sam, and Seymour Kessel went down to Bolivia, and they got fucking stranded down there in some kind of... I know the Bolivia thing. I remember he went down to Bolivia. Something happened down there. But something about they went to Colorado and got snowed in a cabin. Yeah, they were all fucked up.
Sam Peckinpah has got issues, man. He's nuts. That's why... But you know what? He, a lot of great artists are nuts. It's really true.
Yeah, well, that's why you know, his shit worked. And then, you know, like I said, you know, unfortunately, he died of a massive heart attack at 53. And LQ's running buddy, Strother Martin. He was actually a swimming instructor for the U.S. Navy during World War II. And what put him over in the 70s, I mean, he had been doing stuff, westerns. Remember, here's a good one for you. Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
Oh, yeah.
He was a little sadistic guy in that. You know, here's Lee Marvin's gang. Lee Marvin, Lee Van Cleef, and Strother Martin. What a crew. So, yeah, but what put him over the top was Cool Hand Luke with that whole line, what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Exactly.
And then that just gave him basically everything in the 70s. And then, unfortunately, he dropped out of a heart attack. Another guy dropped out of a heart attack in 1980.
It's terrible.
And his characters in Westerns were called Prairie Scum. A lot of stuff. You know, the whole Ballad of Cable Hogan, you know, that Sam Peckinpah thing when him and LQ, you know, teamed up. Here's another good one. He was Tommy Chong's dad in Up in Smoke.
Wow. I didn't even remember that.
Yeah. Remember that shit Finkelstein?
Yep, I remember that now. Yeah,
that was him.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. Yeah, I, like I said, you know, unfortunately, you know, he just, unfortunately, he was in, what the fuck? I'm remembering shit as I talk, which is ad-libbing, you know, in this business.
But, that's the way it goes.
Fuck. With Lee Marvin and Oliver Reed in the Great Scout Cat House Thursday.
Oh, yeah.
So he was in a lot of shit. Another one, Haney Calder, one of the Clements brothers, Ernest Borgnine, Jackie Ilham, and him. He was Rufus, the dumb one.
Gotcha.
There's a fucking movie you got to find when they put that out.
Yeah, someday. I heard that they were pulling out some of Samuel Fuller's stuff. You know, that's, speaking of demented genius, you know, Peckinpah was nuts. Well, so was Sam Fuller. But his movies, man, they were really in your face. And, I guess they're going to try to put out a criterion, or else it's already out, of White Dog. Can you imagine?
Oh, fuck yeah. That was rough stuff. That was some crazy shit. Here's another guy. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, too. Roy Jensen. He was the guy. You remember him for this. Remember Chinatown, Jack Nicholson?
Oh, yeah.
He's the guy who sliced open his nose.
Oh, okay. I was sitting here thinking, Jensen, it's not George. It's not Elroy. I got to figure this guy out.
Roy Jensen.
Wow.
Yeah, he served on a destroyer in World War II. What got him into it was he was in the Canadian Football League, and when Robert Mitchum was up there, they were filming River No Return with him and Marilyn Monroe.
Right.
He stunt doubled for Mitchum.
Oh, cool.
And he liked it. He said he really liked playing it heavy. And if people don't know who he is, you're trying to figure it out. He was the guy in Charles Bronson's Breakout that Bronson tried to rent his wife to be a distraction. They were in a trailer, and he goes, "How much do you make? You know, what, this is nothing wrong with this." And, you know, he was just big, burly biker type guy. And as a matter of fact, remember the Clint Eastwood flicks with the monkey, Every Which Way You Can, Every Which Way But Loose?
Yeah.
He was the biker with the eye patch.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
He was also a biker in the Gauntlet.
Yep. So, the Gauntlet's a great movie, by the way. Just watched it again recently. It's really, you know what? It kind of annoyed me as I watched the movie because it was so good. And then I remembered another movie that was just like it, called 16 Blocks, that didn't even give credit to The Gauntlet. And it was the same freaking movie almost.
Yeah, right.
And I like Willis, don't get me wrong. Bruce Willis is great, but 16 Blocks really owed, it was almost plagiarism.
Well, so was Ransom with Point Blank.
Yeah.
Payback.
Mm-hmm. I knew what you're talking about.
Payback was Point Blank. It was a remake of Point Blank.
Well, and plus they actually did some remakes recently of Asian flicks and didn't even give the Asian movies the credit at all.
Yeah. We'll see if you know who this guy is. Remember Dub Taylor?
I know the name.
Okay. He was a Western sidekick back in the 30s. Actually, his last film, again, a lot of guys' last films, unfortunately, were Maverick.
Oh, yeah. Mel Gibson.
Yeah. McClure, Paul Beininger, Dub Taylor. William Marshall.
But that's what, you know what, that was cool about Maverick was because they paid homage and respect to all those guys.
But yeah, he was in it. He another guy worked with Peckinpah, Major Dundee. He was on that. Did a lot of John Wayne stuff. And he'd show up in these wild card things like The Creature from Black Lake and Tick, Tick, Tick. And here's something I actually remember. He was on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
And he played the xylophone using three mallets.
Wow.
I distinctly remember that because I was looking some stuff up and they were talking about that. I'm like, you know, I fucking, you know, they used to get some offbeat people on The Tonight Show. They leave Van Cleef on one night. He looked uncomfortable as hell. He didn't want to fucking be there. They were putting over that, remember when they cast him as a ninja?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
They were trying to put that over.
Yep. I do remember that.
Yeah. Then another guy teamed up with Warren Oates. It was actually a legit cowboy. It was Ben Johnson.
Oh, wow.
He was a rodeo performer. How he got into it was Howard Hughes had hired him to take a herd of horses out to California. And he liked the pay, so he hung around. He was stunt doubling for John Wayne and Gary Cooper and James Stewart. Then John Ford gave him his big break, but then there was a big miscommunication between them, and they never worked together again. And guys are like this, you know, guys going back my age and shit or older, you know, we're all probably dropping dead soon, but he was the lead, Mighty Joe Young.
Man.
Yeah. He was also, him and Warren Oates must have been buddies, so they did a lot of shit together. He was Melvin Purvis in Dillinger.
That's awesome.
And somebody wanted him, that whole thing with the Last Picture Show, he really didn't want to do it because he was pretty much of a straight-laced guy, and the dialogue was too dirty. So they really wanted him to do it, and they cleaned up the dialogue for him. And if you remember when he won the Oscar, he goes, some people wouldn't say this. He goes, but I really deserve this. He did a couple, you know, genre things, too. He was in Cherry 2000, Red Dawn, and fortunately, he died visiting his mother, who was in a retirement home.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know how old his mother was, but he was like 80-something.
I mean, I'll tell you what, that is really odd, though, because when you mention Red Dawn, no one mentions that movie anymore, but that was a pretty cool little flick for its time.
Oh, I love Red Dawn. That, like, still gets me, you know, rah-rah and shit. And, you know, how many guys came out of that? I mean, Patrick Swayze was the lead. But, you know, again, Roy Jensen was in that. He's another underrated guy, Harry Dean Stanton. He was in it. Oh,
he's awesome.
Yeah, Harry's great. Shit, Cisco Pike, I think, was his first movie. Yo, Deed in the Bathtub.
I just loved pretty much everything he's done, and I love the work he's done with Lynch. He's just always cool in the
day. Oh, yeah, he was also in Dillinger, too. Him and, you know, another one, Jeffrey Lewis, they were in Dillinger. It was all ensemble cast, but, yeah. I'm talking, you know, Red Dawn was fucking, you know, C. Thomas Howell, Charlie Sheen, you know, all them guys, and, you know, Jennifer Grey and...
Yep, Jennifer Grey. That was, like, her last big thing she did.
What the fuck was... Oh, Leah Thompson. Whatever happened to her? She was hot.
She's still around once in a while. You'll see her doing stuff. She was on, like, Law and Order and stuff.
Yeah. She was heading up there. She was actually showing signs of a good actress. But our last character actor for this evening is none other than a perennial favorite of ours, Oliver Reed.
Oh, yeah.
Oliver Reed. I mean, he was just as tough as he was. And, you know, the story was he got 36 stitches in his face after a barroom fight. And they thought that would end his career. And God, how much shit has he been in? I mean, tons of stuff. You know, literally tons of stuff. I mean, Curse of the Werewolf.
That was my favorite. That was my very favorite. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I think there was something, was a story. What soured him? He was one of the only guys that didn't, he called himself Mr. England, was his nickname, self-proclaimed Mr. England, because he was one of the only guys that didn't leave for the tax break. Because they taxed the piss out of these guys over here. I mean, Christopher Lee left. You know, all them guys left.
Yeah. And now, of course, it's better. But, yeah, back then.
Yeah, but the whole thing was when he did that movie, The Hunting Party, and he had to come up with an American accent. And he said that really soured him toward working over here. But I know after that he did, you know, the Great Cat and, you know, Great Scout and Cat House Thursday with Lee Marvin and Kay Lenz and Strother Martin and shit. So, yeah, he did a lot of crazy shit. He actually quit. He wasn't going to act for a while. I remember the whole story about him getting the... They had hired him for that stupid-ass movie with Cutthroat Island, I think it was.
Yeah, yeah.
They had hired him for that. He was just, like, so out of control on the set, they just paid him and sent him home.
They're like, all right, we're done with you, buddy.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what happens with him. And then, you know, of course, you I don't know if you ever heard any of the stories about on the set of Venom with him and Kinski.
I did, yeah. It was like a nightmare.
Yeah, because, you know, they were both trying to upstage each other, and Reed was holding back for a while until there was this scene where they had to walk through a threshold, and Kinski just put his arm out, and Reed just looked at the director and said, well, fuck this, and just hit him. You know,
that was awesome.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But I don't know if I ever told this story on the air about him being on Letterman.
I don't think so.
Sure.
You might have, but if you did, it was a long time ago.
Okay, well, fuck it. People can write in and say, okay, you're double-dipping again, so fuck it.
It's all right.
He was on Letterman, but before he was on Letterman, they had Lee Marvin on. And Lee was pretty, you know, candid about, you know, him drinking and carrying on, you know, because that's what Lee did. You know, Lee was a, you know, fun-loving drunk.
Yeah, he enjoyed himself.
Yeah. So, you know, he was, you know, talking about what they were doing after hours on the Cat House Thursday deal. So they get Reed on, and Letterman starts prodding, oh, we had Lee on, you know, and all of a sudden Reed visibly stiffens. And Letterman, you know, for whatever reason, didn't catch that and kept, you know, oh, come on, tell us this and tell us that. All of a sudden, Reed gets up, takes off his glasses, puts them on a desk, folds his jacket. He's ready to fight him. He was ready to fight him.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And it was another one. I don't remember the show. It was a daytime thing. Because I used to work nights a lot, so I get the fucking, you know, the girl I was living with, I had to watch this fucking drivel sometimes. But he was on one time. And right after him was a guy who wrote a tell-all book about Marilyn Monroe. And he fucking flips out. He stands up. How dare you insult that woman's memory? Then they, like, the camera pans on his face, and you see all the fucking scar tissue from all the bar fights he was in.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And, you know, he was at one point considered to be James Bond to replace Sean Connery.
I don't see it. I just don't see it.
No, they saw it, though. I mean, he was a pretty good-looking guy back in the day, you know? Look at that thing, the Assassination Bureau and shit. Look at the ones when he was younger, where he was basically, you know, either playing a heel or playing it straight. He wasn't a bad-looking guy.
All I can remember is Curse of the Werewolf. He always looked terrible.
Yeah, but no, when he was doing his other shit, I mean, it would have worked, but they said by that time, his drinking and, you know, brawling in public was so out of control, they couldn't do it. Then it was another thing. Remember when they did the Three Musketeers?
Oh, yeah.
All the real-life carnage on the set because he got stabbed in the throat and almost died.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But now, I don't know if anybody knows this, but this is a testament to the man. He died after drinking 3 bottles of Captain Morgan rum, 8 German beers, multiple shots of Hennessy, and famous something whiskey. And then he beat 5 sailors at arm wrestling before he killed over and died off the bar stool.
That's crazy.
I mean, and I'm reading this off because I had to write this down because there's no way I was going to remember this.
Yeah, but you know, that's just like, wow, that's a living legend, but you almost kind of got to go, dude, yeah, what a waste.
That was like, holy fuck, you know?
Because he had such talent. I mean, see that what we're talking about here, a lot of people don't grasp in today's age and maybe we should do this for a future show. Let's talk about today's character actors, because there's a few, like Tony Todd and Artie Ermey, that can do anything. Yeah. They're chameleons.
Forsythe, Lance Hendrickson,
right.
Sid, you know, Bill Moseley can go back and forth and shit. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that are very underrated. They're not used in the major films, and that's where they're fucking up, because they should be using them there.
Well, yeah, they should have these guys in all. I mean, Sid Haig should be in every horror movie almost, or in every action movie, just because he's so versatile. You could put him in. I mean, and Corman did. Corman used him in everything, and you didn't even know what you were just going to look up. Hey, there's that guy. It's Sid. Yeah, you were like, that's awesome, man, because you didn't know what he was going to be. You never knew. He could be the nice guy. He could be anything. And that's what maybe, you know, we should talk about this, because people don't understand. These guys can really act. These guys have talent. Instead of these idiots on the WB who stand there and pose in between each line waiting for a laugh track. I mean, for God's sakes, there's nobody worth watching almost on television. 90% of those people need to get a job in a sideshow.
No, you know, I'm to the point where I, like I said, you know, I'm kicking around a lot of options, and one option might be to go to California and, like, you know, I know Eric Caden over there. I know a couple other people over there. I met a lot of people on the internet, so I'm sure somebody could, you know, show me around over there. So there might be an option to do something. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, just with, you know, with my sick mind and what you know. I mean, there could be not even a reality show, but a sitcom or a situation type deal based on New York City Liquidators. I should start telling fucking Liquidator stories. Yeah. Liquidator stories. I could do 3 fucking shows on that.
There you go, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was probably, aside from working for myself, the best job I ever had, because it was basically just still working for myself and just, you know, okay, we can do this. I can tell people to go fuck themselves, and I'll get other customers, because I don't like some of these people.
Oh, that just the parts I've heard are crazy. I mean,
there's some crazy shit. I mean, even Ken could tell you. Ken used to call up. People would be having fist fights in the background and shit. Just sitting there fucking, okay, what do you want to buy? It's nuts. I mean, I missed shit. All the good shit. I can't even say it was good shit because he got raided by the feds for the bootleg tapes.
I remember that. Thing. Yeah, you told me about that.
Yeah, biggest bootleg tape bust in the history of New York City.
Yep. Yeah. Luckily, you just missed it.
I was, you know, I wasn't even a consideration because I somehow knew I was always going to wind up back over there, but I didn't know what capacity. That was the whole thing because, you know, after I got married, I didn't, you know, I'd go, but not as much as I, you know, was going in the 70s and shit. And I'm trying, I think I got married. Oh, my ex-wife wouldn't listen to this anyway. Trying to fucking think when, you know, might have been mid 80s, but then again, you know, you were hitting that stride where it was getting really fucking shitty too, so it wasn't that much to do. It was only back when I went back over, when I started working for him. Shit. I worked 5 or 6 years. Backtrack from 2003. So I went in over there about 98. And it was still shit going on over there, but nothing like it used to.
Well, yeah, they had to. They had to change a little or the place wouldn't even be there anymore.
Nah, it was all boarded up and shit. Then all of a sudden, bang, we hit 2000 and it's fucking Disneyland. That just came up overnight. It's like everything was boarded up and it looked really shitty. And like people were holding on to this faint hope that something that was going to fucking happen. It was a done deal. But I digress. Where the fuck are we going with this?
Hey, I don't know, but I got to tell everybody that if you happen to have a Blu-ray player, Blue Underground's been putting out a bunch of good stuff. City of the Living Dead came out last week. It's
yeah, I got that. I got a regular one.
Oh my god, it's unbelievable! And also, they've been starting to put out the Django westerns, and also
in Blu-ray.
Yeah, in Blu-ray and Vampires, Very Unnatural Ladies. They've been putting that's that a good one flick. Out. Yeah,
that's another underrated flick. I mean, you want to talk about heavy duty eroticism and really spooky fucking shit? Vampires.
I love that movie.
That's great.
Toolbox Murders, they put that one out. Talk about
that
fun.
That's really sleazy.
You know, it's sleazy, but it's so fun in a weird way. I mean, at the beginning of the movie, you're just hammering home the gore and just like, bam, bam. And all of a sudden, dude starts singing songs. Like, hold on a minute. I always loved Cameron Mitchell anyway. Just see him hammering.
That was the
like
whole
that.
Bottom out Cameron Mitchell deal. Because we were talking last week about the whole thing. You know, he did that, and then he wound up doing that, you know, Dixie Ray Hollywood star porn thing as a detective. So,
Tales, yeah. Terror on Tape, which he was in, which was like his last bit of stuff he did. That Michelle Bauer was in it with him, Terror on Tape. Yeah, you know, I like that, though. Continental put it out.
There was one movie. I mean, I was going back to the Neville Brand thing. I was listening to it. I downloaded the show. I wanted to hear how it came out. I think I must have tripped over something, or we said something, got sidetracked on a Neville Brand thing. The last thing he did was Evils of the Night, and I urge people not to buy it because, no, I'm being serious, because the man looked very sick, like he was on his way out. And I don't think it's the way anybody should be remembered, to being stuck in a piece of shit like that, number one, and being used as a rapist, number two.
Well, in the fact, honestly, to be honest, you couldn't hardly see him anyway because the damn thing was lit with a damn ever-ready flashlight. Still,
people will buy it because him and Aldo are in it. These guys were both, you know, they both had one foot in the grave, and I don't think it was right to fucking, you know. Well, John Carradine was in it too, but then John Carradine had been dead for 14 years before that.
I know, so. And so is Ginger from Tina Louise.
Yeah. I disowned Gilligan's Island, but yeah, I did Evils of the Night.
I like Gilligan's Island. What's wrong with you, man? It's fun.
She just owns it. Amber Lynn's in it, too.
Yeah. Amber, yeah. I can't believe all the people that are in that piece of shit. Come on, guys. What would it have taken to set up a light? A light man.
Who would think he'd have a cohesive plot and actual fucking special effects?
Well, there was nothing in that movie at all. I don't even know how it really got distribution, except for the fact that, like you said, they paid a couple of people to be in it.
Marty Rustum. It was the whole deal, because that was the whole thing. They'd used, you know, I think they janked Neville back in, because prior to that, Hooper had used him. But he was still, you know, he didn't look that bad, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, come on. His skin was sallow. He fucking looked, he was horrible.
At least when Hooper used him, he was fun. I mean, he was great in that movie. Eaten Alive is a classic.
He was doing it, but yeah. We were talking about something the fuck else now. Shit.
I don't know. Hell, we get sidetracked. We've only got about 4 minutes.
This show's all over the fucking road anyway, so it really doesn't matter.
We got actually 6 minutes left, so we're doing all right.
There's no cohesive thought.
There's not a train of thought here, people. We're just enjoying ourselves. That's what it's about.
Yeah, well, I'm going to try to get, you know, Amy Lynn Best and Mike Watt on, you know, maybe next week or something. Trying to work on the, you know, the WSU Mixed Big Show is coming up. It's going to be 6/26 at the Ace Arena in Union City, and I'm going to try to get, you know, I like to get everybody back, but I really should try to get some new girls on, you know, let them, you know, put themselves over and shit. So I got to email the promoter, Mr. Mick.
Well, we're not going to have Amy on, man.
Oh, we'll have Amy.
Oh, all right.
Just so you can get a fucking Woody listening to her.
She's awesome, man. She's awesome.
But the whole thing is, I want to tell, if anybody's listening remembers this thing, and this actually happened. I don't know if I had said this before. Angel and Amy were talking about how they met, and they said, you know, they banged one out. And they said, yeah, we should do that real soon. People would want to see us bang another one out. Well, Amy really didn't have an opponent going in. I don't know what they were going to do. But then Angel was supposed to wrestle Nikki Rocks, but Nikki Rocks had broke her ankle in two places. So she said she was ready to come back, but they didn't think it was, you know, worth the risk of you know, her hurting herself again. So wound up, guess what? Three-way slugfest: Angel, Amy, and Sumi Sakai. So well, I'm going to bring that up too, because it actually happened. But now, as it stands, Amy's wrestling Mickey Knuckles, who was trained by Ian Rotten, the King of Hardcore, and Mickey Knuckles is as nuts as fucking Amy is. Uh-oh. Maybe even more so, because she fought a guy named Brain Damage. Go look that one up. So, and then I'm trying to think. Angel is going to actually team with Jazz, you know, from, you know, former WWE Women's Champ and former ECW superstar, and they're going to go after Nikki Rocks. And I'm trying to think who it is. Somebody new, I think. And then Awesome Kong is going to be there. There's going to be a bunch of really cool shit going on. You know, they're showcasing a bunch of new girls. So, what the fuck?
That's right. It'll
be
awesome.
If you can't make the event, hit the DVD, you know?
For sure. While we're on it, thank you guys, because you got me some autographs from people, and you sent me some discs from the last deal you went to, and I want to thank you guys for that. It's awesome.
Oh, I told him I was going to take the things off the table anyway. Mercedes was more than, you know, cool to do it. But I was actually working with her the last show, you know, at the merchandise table, you know.
That's awesome. You
know, things awesome. I don't know if I want to work security anymore. That's going to be one hot motherfucking building, because there's no air up there, too. It's going to be hot.
Sweaty,
but
Amy.
I'm going to get that promoter on, too, because he seems to be, you know, he's one of the few guys right about now that actually has shit mapped out, where he knows where he's going with his promotion, as opposed to these guys who, I'll just hire some TNA guys and I'll get over. Yeah, one fucking show, you had Homicide and somebody else on top. They drew 20 fucking people. Jeez. 20 people.
That's nuts.
You know, it's just an oversaturation. You got to give the people a reason to come back, and that's the whole thing. What's lacking today is good storylines and credible characters, because the whole deal was, you know, years ago, they would work the whole TV and end it so you would want to come out Saturday night to see the guy get the shit knocked out of him for what he just did on TV.
Exactly.
That's how they'd work it. Now you don't even give a fuck, you know?
It's all BS.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, was, as much as I hated this, because there was always guys that were overmatched and shit, you know, they beat up these guys that were up and coming, but that's how these guys learned. They go out there, they get squashed by the, you know, the bigger names, and that's how they learned, you know? But now we can't have that. You know, you can have a couple of them squashes, but, you know, you very rarely see that anymore. But that was the whole thing to get a monster over, is the guy would come out and just, like, kill a guy in under, like, a minute. So that's what they used to do back then.
That's true.
So that's how you, case in point, was, remember Goldberg?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Goldberg killed everybody until he came up to like Hogan, Hall, and Nash, who didn't want to get killed. And it was like, okay, he's beaten 900 guys. Which one of us gets to beat him, you know? Stupidity. You know, it's like sometimes it makes you wonder because, you know, he'll have a guy that can go like 90. Well, see, nobody will do this anymore. I don't know if you remember this far back. Some of these things used to go 90 minutes for one match.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Nobody would buy that today. The attention span ain't there.
True.
But the whole thing is, if anybody ever wants to see how to keep anybody's attention for about an hour, the ECW original three-way dance with Shane Douglas, Terry Funk, and Sabu, because they kept this fucker going for close to an hour. And all run-ins, you know, the Rottens ran in, Sensational Sherry, Paul Lee, this one, that one. Guys got carried out. It's shit. That's how to work something like that and keep everybody going. And they got a standing ovation at the end. You never see that anymore. Oh, and actually going back onto that, to Digger Films, Under the Scares, you did get a standing ovation at the end of the thing. And that is the truth. And as far as I'm concerned, the film deserved a standing ovation. So in closing tonight, go check out Under the Scares and stay sick.
Second Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Oh, wah, ah, ah, ah. Oh, wah, ah, ah, ah. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up. Come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
2, 3, 4.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Why can't you just fuck up and die? Get down with the sickness. Fuck you, I don't need this shit. I'm down with the sickness. You stupid, sadistic, abusive fucking organ. Down with the sickness. Here it comes.
Here we go again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here. Too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I wanna sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.